AK Files, the ultimate Raiders podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Right, today to talk about the Raiders, we join Vic Tafer, the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him at Vic Tafer. That's V-I-C-T-A-F-U-R. Vic, the Raiders come off a win over the Tennessee Titans. We know it's the Titans, that they're not dominant, but the Raiders wanted to get themselves kind of back in the black after the week prior to this, and now maybe things are all back and right in Raider land with a win. How is the team feeling after this one?
Yeah, they're feeling pretty good. They're 2-0 on the road for the first time, I think, in like 14 years. So things are pretty positive. Defense wasn't terrible last week. That's a step up. So, yeah, I think everyone's pretty excited about what's been going on.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray had a big day, obviously, and he had the 114 yards and a touchdown, and he caught another 41. But you kind of pick your poison in the NFL, and what they wanted to do was make sure that Marcus Mariota didn't do anything to hurt them, and he really didn't. 214 yards, barely got to 50% completion rate, a sack, two interceptions. The Raiders really kept him in check and kept that Tennessee passing game from doing really anything of significance against the Oakland D.
It did. I think definitely the Titans missed Delaney Walker had a hamstring injury. That would have been a big deal after the play because Raiders have trouble with tight ends. But them being out definitely limited Mariota's weapons. I think the secondary did a nice job. The Raiders secondary did a nice job against the Titans receivers, who aren't a great bunch. So the defense definitely took a step up.
Mariota's a tough guy to pressure, obviously. He's very, very mobile. And sometimes when you look at the way that quarterbacks play games and they're rushed, it is oftentimes about the pressure more than it is the sacks that cause the really damaging plays. And so I think when you look at a guy like Khalil Mack and people maybe look at the box score and say, boy, he didn't really do that much. That's not entirely true. Sometimes pressure isn't something to necessarily track on the score sheet.
True. I think he's definitely still been a factor. I think also when he takes up two guys sometimes, that frees up somebody else. So I think even if teams, what should happen, focusing on Khalil and Alex trying to take him away, he's the biggest weapon they have here. But even when they do that, it gives the other guys chances to make plays. The other guys have less of the obstacles in front of them. So I think even if he only has zero sacks, he's still a factor.
Obviously, pretty good passing performance. It wasn't lights out with the yards, but it didn't need to be. The 249 yards by Carr, the touchdown, and the pick. Only sacked once, but Michael Crabtree looked great yet again. Amari Cooper was effective. This is a team that has a very deep passing attack, and it seems like it's just expanding over time as there's a little bit more comfort level. What's the ceiling for this Raiders passing attack? It seems like they have great possession guys, a potentially elite receiver in Cooper. They have a lot of different options.
Yeah, definitely. They're getting better. I think, obviously, Clyde Walford had a career-high game about 2 weeks ago, so the tight ends are going more of a factor. And the young running back, DeAndre Washington, I think his tech is really good, catching those swing passes, so he's definitely be a weapon at some point. So a lot of guys are kind of a threat, too. The running game has been good. And it all starts with the O-line. The O-line's really been, I think, one of the best in the league. So I think the offense definitely can carry the defense if it has to the rest of the way.
The running game really was good when you look at it. The 123 yards as a team, but it was the way they got it that was interesting. 10 carries for Latavius Murray. He was arguably the least effective guy of the three that got significant carries, even though he got the touchdown. Jalen Richards, 6 for 28. That's 4.7 per. DeAndre Washington, as you pointed out, 6 for 57, 9.5 per. I think when a lot of people looked at this team, they figured Latavius Murray was going to be the bell cow. It seems as if the season kind of evolves, the Raiders are better off mixing and matching with these three very talented backs, aren't they?
Yeah, and definitely Murray's definitely a different kind of back than the other two guys are. So he's definitely more of the bigger physical guy. He's got some speed. But the other two guys have some wiggle to them. They're both about 5'8", 5'9", not very big, but the Wolf can get to openings probably quicker than Murray can. They both are good out of the backfield. So I think the Raiders plan is to use all three, and ideally, if the game was close, you go like the Murray in the fourth quarter, kind of pound out a win. So that's kind of like the master plan right now.
Well, 2-1 in the AFC West, one behind Denver, certainly in the mix. They will face one of the remaining undefeated teams next week when they face the Baltimore Ravens, again on the road. So three out of their first four on the road. This is maybe a game that's got a couple pitfalls to it, but it also seems to me to be a terrific opportunity for the Raiders. If you start out winning your first three road games, you have set yourself up in outstanding position. And while the Ravens are 3-0, it's not as if they've exactly gone out and knocked off a bunch of world beaters.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good spot for the Raiders. You got nothing to lose. I think obviously you're feeling good about yourself right now, and you have a chance to make even more of what you said, like I did to start the season. So I think the Ravens don't run the ball that well. So I think that's definitely a plus for the Raiders defense. They can focus on one thing and just focus on getting some pressure on Joe Flacco and kind of stopping the receivers and hoping that Mike Wallace will beat you deep. So I think if you just, you know, the Raiders defense can target their focus, it might be okay.
Raiders' first pick in the draft this year, 14th overall, Carl Joseph, the safety out of West Virginia. Third game of his career, leads the team in tackles, 10 tackles, six of them solo. How quickly has he adjusted to the NFL game, and how impressive has he been for the Raiders so early on?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because he actually didn't play any defensive snaps the first two games. I think he was coming off knee surgery in college, and also they wanted him to have more time to kind of get used to the flow and where his eyes should be when the ball snapped and where he should be looking. So I think he kind of took it a nice slow process into it. So I think he's ready to go last week. And obviously going against Mariota is a little easier than going against Drew Brees or Matt Ryan. So it was also, I think, part of the strategy. So it worked out well. He played well. He flies around. He likes to hit people. He's not very big. He's about 5'10". So I think it will be a factor at some point regarding big tight ends or maybe getting hurt. But, yeah, he's definitely got a lot of energy, and I think this has been a nice little boost for this team last week.
Their second-round selection, Jihad Ward out of Illinois, the defensive end, they're also getting into the act with four tackles. It's pretty fortunate for the Raiders, and a credit to their drafting, that they're able to get those guys in the first couple rounds that it can be impactful from the get-go, because I think the challenge when you see teams that struggle, like the Browns consistently or the Bears consistently, they miss on the high draft picks. Not every draft pick necessarily high has to be a superstar, but they have to be contributors. The Raiders have to be really pleased with what they've seen so far from their high draft picks.
Yeah, they like Ward. Ward's got a nice ceiling. I think he's a little raw, so I think if you watched the film last week, I think he had some trouble. A lot of those Murray runs you mentioned kind of went through him. So I think I'm sure the Ravens, when they watch the game film, he's a guy that probably going to try and isolate, try and run towards him. I think he's having some trouble holding his ground. But again, he's a young guy. And upside, he's learning on the job. So that's all positive when you're trying to build a defense.
This is a team that's now won a game 35-34 in a shootout and then played a pretty defensive battle and win 17-10, both of those on the road, like we talk about now going into Baltimore. What's the confidence level of the Raiders? This seems to be a team that's maturing week to week under Jack Del Rio, a guy that tends to actually really encourage confidence because he carries it himself.
Yeah, the players bought in last year when he came in. Definitely had a little swagger to him, a little confidence, like even cockier, as you can say. And they loved it when they went for the two and the win the first week. The players really responded well to that, and they're all on the same page. I think it's good. I think they realize they're 2-1, but still not really playing that well. They're kind of getting by a little bit here and there, so still work to do. So it's all been good. Everyone's pretty positive about the way things are going.
Yeah, very interesting October coming up for the Raiders. They have the Ravens, as we talked about, and then the rest of the month, Chargers and Chiefs in division, a Jaguars team that hasn't won yet, and a Buccaneers team that looks extremely wobbly all of a sudden. There's a chance for the Raiders to all of a sudden find themselves in the mix more than halfway through by the time they face the Broncos come November. So this has to be a very exciting time to be a Raiders fan. But the specter of the potential move looming over everything, how is that playing out in Oakland?
I think fans are frustrated, obviously, and when a team finally gets good, they're going to lose. But I think there's still a long way to go. I mean, the Vegas thing, I think, is it sounds good, and obviously a lot of money being talked about being handed over to the league. But still a lot of loopholes to jump, a lot of pearls to jump, a lot of things to get done as far as they have to go through the league. I think it's actual approval from the governor. So I think that's still a far way off. I think nothing's going to happen here in home front as far as getting stadium done here. So I think right now it's still in limbo, so fans are still going to enjoy the moment, enjoy the wins, and worry about that later.
Well, you want to keep in touch with what's going on with the Raiders, make sure you follow Vic on Twitter. That is VICTAFUR. He's with the San Francisco Chronicle, and he has got the information on the silver and black. Vic, so much. Thanks a lot for your time today and the insight. This is a fascinating story. This is one of the teams, one of the dark horse teams by a lot of folks that thought they could sneak into the playoffs. They may not sneak into it. They may kick the door down.
There you go. Yeah, it's been good.
Well, Well, thanks a bunch for for joining us, and hopefully later in the season we'll be able to check with you and check in with the Raiders, see where they're going. In the meantime, we will head over and get a little more football knowledge from a guy who spent some time on the sidelines. We'll be back with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you, no Tom Brady. We're going to spot you, no Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you, all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's Buffalo. And you know fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had 8 starters that were our former first or second-round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to win 2 games. And so, oh my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-to-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family is getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of read it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner than Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense. Should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.